Hi, everybody. This is Nancy Miller for My Creative Life, the podcast about creatives, how and why they make the work that they do. And this is a very special guest that I just adore the work that they make. And I have to give a little intro, of course. I know who he is. But for those of you who are listening, since it's a podcast and I don't do video, it's Merrill Rainey, award-winning illustrator, designer, and paper engineer. Merrill likes to experiment with art tools and uses markers, cut paper, or water-soluble graphite to create his illustration work. Merrill lives in Ohio with his lovely family. His current titles include Roar, I'm a Dinosaur, winner of the Good Housekeeping Best Kids Board Book of 2022, Oink, I'm a Pig, and the Color Cut Create series. His newest illustrated title is Giants Are Very Brave People. Hi, Merrill. How are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
Wonderful. I mean, this is such a huge honor to have you as a guest.
Aw, shucks. That's my daughter's favorite phrase right now is, but I totally appreciate you having me on here. I'm so excited to see where our conversations go here today. So,
well, your work, when I saw it, and just a little bit of backstory, why I asked Merrill to be a guest is Tamika Grooms, who was a guest on this podcast. She was like, you know who you need to interview? You need to interview Merrill Rainey. And I was like, really? And then I clicked on it because your name did sound familiar.
Yeah, I think we've known each other for a while, at least through social media, because I totally, when you emailed me, your name like popped right up to mine of who you were. So it was good to reconnect after connecting, whenever that was.
But it's like you go big or go home. Goodness, if you go on his social media, and mainly because I'd been following you on Instagram, and I was like, wow. I mean, like, it's literally like the world building is the appeal to me as an art teacher and also as an illustrator. I go, it's like physical, it's tangible, you can interact with it. And I love how inventive, like, and I know you're going to go through these questions and just blow our minds away. But like the inspiration for this, I feel like there is so much play and joy in what you create. Like, and I want to learn more. And I knew like, oh, I have to have him as a guest because not only do I want to use his products in my classroom as an art teacher, but I just, the adult in me, adult child, to play with it too. But I wanted to ask you, so where did this all start? Like this making and creating and play?
So that's a good question. So last year, during the holidays, I did an event at the Toledo Art Museum. They were doing like a winter break, kind of come to the art museum. We were doing all these different things. And, that was actually the first time I debuted reading, Giants Are Very Brave People in front of a crowd. And then we had a bunch of different like activities built up with that. So in the book, there's like a series of like clouds that are like secondary, characters, and we had like create your own cloud character, and there was some other paper toys from other from the Color Cut Create books and stuff that the kids are doing. But I had a young gentleman come up to me during that towards the end while we were making, and he asked the same question, like, why did you become an author and illustrator? And I can't remember exactly what short-term answer I gave him, what the quick answer was, but it really got me thinking like afterwards. Like, why did I really set off on this journey? You know, it's, I've been working as a contract illustrator for over 10 years now. And just recently in the last like 5 years or so, started moving into the trade, book world. And so I've had a lot of thoughts rolling in my head in terms of, you know, I'm finally here. How do we keep going? Why did I end up being here? And I think the simple answer is that this career path chose me. Like, it was what I was meant to do. And when I was thinking about that young gentleman that asked the question, you know, where a lot of what I enjoy doing, not necessarily the book creation, but being able to go into schools and be able to work with these kids. And so it's kind of like the books are to get me into the schools to be able to talk to these kids about why we need to create, why they need to create. And then my hope is that, you know, if I have a gymnasium full of 500 kids, right, that at least if I can get inspire one of those kids to become the next creator of whatever it is in the next 20 years, then my job is done for the day. So it's kind of like a nice kind of full circle. And generically, I get out of this way. I just, you know, I grew up in a family who always a large family of seven kids, and we were always doing imaginary play. I can't remember how many craft things that we were making. I used to craft with my mom doing different things. We used to build generically, growing up with a family full of boys, we built a lot of swords and whatever else, that we went on imaginary adventures. And so we really pushed imaginary play. And when I go into schools and I talk with kids, I bring up the word boredom. And, you know, when you're growing up in the 80s, you know, the internet didn't exist, the Nickelodeon didn't exist, and we didn't have cables. So you had to figure out what to do with your time. And that was a lot of where our time is. And I think that really kind of set the stages of getting me to where I'm at today. So
amazing, because it's like everything that you created, and like whether it's the illustrations, I see the joy in there, but the ones, the products that you, the books that are, you're the creator, really the sole creator of this, the, like, I really love the, because I bought the Color Cut Create, one of the books from that series. Yes. Because I thought, how brilliant is this, like he's literally world built this for like, because the way I want to use it in my class, so it'd be kind of like the jumping point for the kids to like experiment and learn some of the processes that you've built in the cut paper work. And I was like, because I feel like I tell kids in my class, I just, you know, artists steal, and if you can steal it and then make it into your own and learn, what do you learn from that? Like, where did that series come? Like, how did you brainchild this? Like, it's so cool.
So, yeah, so that idea. So just to give you a little bit about a Color Cut Create. So that book, like, we put a lot of thought into that book to make sure that when a child was building it, they would have a successful time doing it. And so I don't know if you've started building anything in there, but like the horse, like whether it's the Horse Ranch or the Dinosaur World book, like once you build one horse or dinosaur or two, then you know how to build all the horses and dinosaurs. So they're built in a specific way to where there's indirect learning going on specifically for the child. And then my hope is that if there isn't something in those books, then now that they've built X amount of these things, they've learned enough that if I fold a sheet of paper four times and I can add some arms and legs or whatever to it, you know what I mean? Like they can start building their own worlds. So I always generically call that like a creativity starter. So like I give you what you need, but my hope is that they take it further than what it is. And, you know, in terms of like the classrooms, there's so many different ways you could use it, from like storytelling to stop motion animation. There's all kinds of different ways you can elaborate it on it more than just what's the book. But the initial idea for that book came from when my son Chase, who's 13 now, was in second grade. I think it was second grade. I'd gone in at the holidays, maybe it was first grade. I'd gone in at the holidays to do a pop-up holiday card with the kids. And I was amazed at how many kids were struggling with cutting a simple like Christmas tree shape out, and how many kids were having a hard time folding a sheet of paper in half, right? And I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, by second grade, I would think that these things should be, these types of motor mechanics should be pretty nailed down. And so then I had conversations with my wife, who's a second grade teacher, in terms of what's going on here. And she was like, you know, with a lot of like the testing and everything, like the artsy craftsy things that we used to do, we just don't always have enough time to get that in the day. And so a light bulb went off in my head, and I'm like, okay, like I think there's something here that I can try, you know, even if it's on a small scale, I can kind of try and help fight this, right? Help try to make sure that kids are getting the things that they need. And so at the time I was working, I do a lot of kids magazine work still, a lot of work with US Kids Magazine, which is Humpty Dumpty and Jack and Jill. And at that time I was doing a black and white coloring page for Humpty Dumpty Magazine. And I kind of just surprised them one morning, because I was a little tired of just doing like a standoff, just coloring page. And so I ended up turning it into a paper toy activity. So it was black and white so the kids could color it. But one side had characters, and then the other side had a play-icon play sets that the characters could interact with. And we caught that. So that ran for almost 5 years, 5 or 6 years in the magazine. So it was, that one was called Color Cut Play. So that was the initial kind of start of where the Color Cut Create series kind of came from. So there was some rhyme and reason of where it kind of started from. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, the more you do it, the more you start to see how it can benefit the users and the way that it can be used to help make, you know, teaching experiences more exciting for a kid. You know what I mean? Like I grew up, I went to school in a small, smaller private school growing up. And we didn't have a dedicated art teacher at the time. So everything is kind of like art on the cart, whatever the teacher was able to kind of come up with. But I, you know, anything that, any kind of activities that we had where I could use that creativity or my art skills was where I always excelled. And I think a lot of kids, especially now, the more you can add that aspect into your learning, I think the more, the better off these kids are. And I think the end results that you get from them show how they can excel at things, just because they might not be good at one point, but if you give them the opportunity to use their creativity or these skills, then they're going to excel at another point. And just giving them those opportunities to know that they can succeed. And then, you know, hopefully that keeps them going. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want them to like fail, you know, you want everybody to know that they might not be good at one thing, but they can succeed in another thing. And if you can get them to realize that they are good at something, going back to that inspiration, you know, within the schools, then the hope is that, you know, that we'll just stick with them, you know? So it's, I think initially that initial campaign of just trying to get those motor skills into the schools has really turned into a much bigger thing, which is fantastic on my end, or great on my end, because that's, you know, going back to, you know, that young man's question last year in terms of why I got into this, you know, and I think deep down, this is why I got into this, you know.
Wonderful. Yeah, I feel like I get what you're saying about it, because as an art teacher, it kind of like worries me a little bit, because they're so young. And like in my when I was working in public school, the whole entire county adopted, like, and I understand why, because there is like this technological advances that we are, you know, inundated with AI and all this stuff. But at the same time, it kind of hurt me just a little bit in my heart teacher, because I was like, you see this shift. Well, if all you've ever done is type, you know, what happened to having like your handwriting, whatever happened to like that personalized touch of humanity? I don't mean to sound like, your signature
is
such a unique. And then like I even saw it with my son, because I was like, he struggled like just like, you should know how to, I don't know. It's like an almost a lost art form. Like when I grew up, cursive was a big thing, and like having your own name that you could write, that individual mark making.
Yeah.
Which I just,
it's a huge. Art.
Yeah. It's like
huge. It is. It really is.
Art. Yeah. You know, it's like,
we're a big, we're a big advocate of handwriting and being able to write well. And you know, all those things that have been around for the dawn of time, like, you know, like math and reading and writing. There's lots of times that we'll end up correcting, our kids will come home with work from school, a writing piece or whatever, and we'll end up like correcting it for them. If their teachers didn't correct it for them, we'll correct them for them. So, because we want to make sure that when they grow up, you know, that, like, to your point, like, you should know how to write your name, right? You know, I mean, that's your mark, that's who you are going forwards. And then, you know, same thing with like writing, like, you need to know. And I struggle with writing, even like just simple grammar as an adult. And it's like, you need to know these things going forwards. You can't be sending acronyms and all these things, you know, as a, as a professional individual, or, you know, just a respectful person, you know, like you should know how to do all these things. But it is, I think, a struggle. You know, it's not, you know, because some places do it well and some places don't. And then it's like, where do you find the middle point of knowing where? But if I can make a difference in that, you know, that's, I hope I can, you know, I hope I can make that difference in it. So.
Oh, well, I think you definitely are, because I think your books are just unique, and they're just like kids. I can already tell, because I had one of my students, because I got the dinosaur one.
Yeah.
He's been begging me to do something dinosaur related, and he's in kindergarten. He's like, can you do something with dinosaurs? And I'm like, I gotcha. Just hang tight. We're going to get there. So, but yeah, no, I appreciate it as a teacher, because it really, it is nice to have something that, you know, that you can utilize in the classroom and get kids engaged and right off the bat. And so how did you kind of segue, like, being a commercial illustrator? And then you're like, you talked about the paper engineering part of it. And then you did, you showed me, and I wish it was video, but the Roar, I'm a Dinosaur.
Yeah.
Like, that, because that's a newer book. So how did that go from
one to the other?
So
that's a good question. I think it was just a matter of getting to the right place at the right time. So being in the trade picture book world is where I was always working towards trying to be, but it just took the right steps, I think, to get to this point. And when I look at I'll go through a couple of these steps. But when I look back, when I first started off, when I quit my full-time job to become a full-time freelance illustrator, I don't think I was prepared then. Like, there was a maturation that happened over the course of time. And it just, you know, like anything, like you learn from one thing and then you learn from those experiences and you move on to the next experience. But I don't think I was ready to be at the point that I am now. When I, as much as I wanted to be, you know, 10 years ago, and it just took some time to know what I needed to do to get to this point. I know you asked the question in terms of like, you know, people to kind of shout out to in terms of like helping you get along the way. And it truly was a series of, I don't know if saying being at the right place at the right time is the right term, but it really was, you know, these groups of individuals just being there at the time that I needed them to be there, and then them giving me the right advice or working with me to get into a workshop or whatever it was, you know what I mean? Like, just all these organic happenings that all kind of like a timeline events that kind of just happened, and all those events just kind of kept building until I got to the point to where, I guess I was trying to think of how many years I've been working with Teresa at Bookmark Literary. So I got to the point to where I was able to work with Teresa. I think it's been five years we've been working with each other now. And then it was just being able to get to the point to where I could work with her, to be able to finally get these ideas that have been rolling around in my head forever out into the world. And I can't say enough about Teresa. She's such a fantastic individual and has such a great knowledge base of the publishing industry, and in terms of who to get your work in front of. So it really goes, you know, that whole saying of like having the right marriage with two people to get your work out there. And it's been pretty good with Teresa. So it was more of a, so it wasn't really like one defining, like, tie, you know what I mean? Like one, like, jumping off the wall of style events, the move from commercial to the trade. I think it was, you know, it was just the time to put in to it in adjusting where I needed to go. But we could probably talk the whole afternoon, and I could tell you every one of those events that like happened to it, because, you know, there are those key things that just, you know, stick in your mind. In terms of, they just make you think, right? In terms of like, why did they say that? Or if you went to a portfolio review, you know, whatever the art director said to you, you come out of that and you're like, okay, like, were they just like blowing me off, or were they actually like giving me like legit like criticism, and you know, and you take that information and you kind of cycle it through, and then you pull out those tidbits of information in terms of what to do with it. And you know, when I think back to some of these portfolio reviews, especially through SCWI that I've had in the past, like everybody that I've talked with was 100% accurate, you know, in terms of whether or not the conversation filled the full 15 minutes, or it was like, I always like my, like to tell the story of my first portfolio review when I first joined SCBWI with Tim Gilner, who was the art director of Boyd's Mill Press at the time. And Tim, he is such a great guy. We've stayed connected. I haven't followed him since he retired. But up till then, we stayed connected since that first portfolio review. And all he told me was, he flipped through my portfolio and he goes, I like your work. It's not right for Boyd's Mill. You'll be okay. And I was like, okay, like, what do I do? You know, like, I just spent whatever it was, like, whatever, $60 or whatever on this, and this is what I got out of this. And, but, you know, years later, Tim and I talked. One of the times I was helping out with a workshop out of the Highlights Foundation, and Tim came and met me for lunch, and we talked, and I was like, do you remember this conversation? And he was like, yeah, I remember this conversation. And I was like, you were 100% accurate, like, with your comment. I was like, obviously, I mean, how many years later, I'm doing okay. Like, I'm still trucking along here. And at the time, like, Boyd's Mill was a very traditional, they hired very traditional artists, right? So my work obviously is nowhere near traditional. But I think at the time, I can remember him saying, you know, he goes something like, at the time I couldn't hire you because we just didn't have, you know, it wasn't our style of book. But he's like, but it is now, so like, we'll see what we can get going. But you know, it's just those conversations that where you don't know what the nugget of gold is that comes out of those, you know. And sometimes it takes a couple of years for it to really kind of sink in terms of how it's going to affect you, I guess, going forwards. But there's been so many of those moments that I don't know. Like I said, I could probably go all afternoon and just go through all these different individuals to it. But it's, you know, it's been a good, I really can't complain. It's been a great journey. And I hope, you know, the biggest thing in the back of my head, you know, over the years, and I think that's with any business or freelance artist, is like, how long can you keep up this like rat race of a journey in terms of just the constant hustle of coming up with new projects and working in current projects and marketing those projects that are out, you know what I mean? Or billing or invoicing or all those different things that you don't see behind the scene. And my hope is that I can continue in this crazy journey, and I'll keep meeting, you know, the right people. And I think, you know, to date, like, it has, held true where, you know, if I needed advice for something at a certain time, and, you know, you have random conversations with somebody you just met and they throw out a word of wisdom and you're like, oh, you know, so hopefully those individuals keep showing up, over the next 10 to 20 years, so I can kind of keep this going and keep the energy going. So.
Well, I'm sure you'll have a long career because just so inventive, the things that you're putting out there. And also, like, I just adore Ed Young, and he passed, I guess, this past year. And I mean, he was illustrating and writing stories till in his 90s. So I figure there's a shot. There's a good shot that you'll keep going. But during this, you know, you talked about how, like, you know, you quit your job to go into being a commercial illustrator. And then I realized when we were talking, like, because it's a big leap of faith that you did, and you had, it sounds like from the age of your son, I think you also had a young family. Can you talk about, would you feel comfortable?
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. That was a weird, I guess I shouldn't say it was a weird time frame. Like, what I'm doing now, I think, was what I was always working towards. And I think I just needed to have the right amount of experience under my belt to feel comfortable, like I can make it happen. And so I was working as a graphic designer. And then within this company, I moved up. I'm trying to think of, it wasn't a creative director title, but it was more of kind of like the manager of the art department, right? So I wasn't doing a whole lot of creative work. I was just kind of like farming out the work that we had to our designers and illustrators, and making sure that we kind of like a production manager, I guess, is a good way to kind of look at it. Like making sure everything was on task and we were making deadlines and all this good stuff. So I was there for about, I think it was like 7 or 8 years I was working there. And, you know, when you come out of, I graduated from Kent State University here in Ohio in 2003. And so, you know, when you come out of college, you're trying to find that first job and you're trying to make a good impression with where you're at. And so I got hired at this place and totally actually lost track of becoming an illustrator for the longest time. And over the course of time, needed to get back into it. And it just happened to be the same time that, if you remember Illustration Friday, when it started, used to follow the drawn.ca blog back when that was popular and caught wind of Illustration Friday. And I'm probably going to pronounce Penelope's last name wrong, but Penelope Delgan, when she started that, like, it really got me back on, like, getting into illustration and being able to have a prompt to work on every week and getting that posted to a blog at the end of the week. So it really kind of helped me start to kind of rebuild my portfolio to the point to where I felt comfortable enough starting to submit work to, you know, I hope postcards don't completely go like out the door with advertising to art directors or whatever since COVID, but that, you know, I would, you know, just like for years after, I would build that creative, that mailing list, and I would start sending out postcards. And then I slowly started getting bites from art directors, and then got a job from US or Jack and Jill magazine, some from Jen Weber Solovic, who is another one of these individuals that just kind of came around the right time. And she hired me for that first job. And so I slowly started picking up. So that kind of like started the waterfall of events of contract work coming in the evenings. And my son Chase was just born. And so I still look back on how I even did this. And I think I was just hungry to be able to do my own thing. And I would go to work to the day job and work 8 to 10 hour days there. And then we'd come home and Chase was just born. So then we'd have like dinner and we would put him to bed. And then I'd work on contract work till like 4 or 5 in the morning and then sleep for an hour or two and then get back up and go back to work. And that probably lasted for, had it been like over a year or so that went on. And it just got to the point to where, you know, I was unsatisfied with the day job, and I knew I had already been looking to try and see if I could find another job somewhere. And that I had, you know, a bunch of freelance work coming in at the time. Early on, I was represented by To-Go-To. So they took me on. So another one of those events where it was like so appreciative of Nicole taking me on at a young age as a young artist, and allowing me to have some experiences. So all these things were kind of just, you know, it was like the stars were aligning to a point, and I had enough saved up in a bank account. And I felt comfortable enough that I had enough work coming in that I could jump ship. So it was an interesting, you know, I can remember sitting at a park, on a bench swing with my wife. We had just gone and I had talked to the company about doing some contract work with them and having the conversation of, you know, if I were to ever do this, this would be the time to do it. And so we both, you know, agreed that this is what we're going to do. And although I don't know how agreeing she was, I think she was a little bit more nervous than me. But I'm, you know, I get kind of headstrong, I think, when I have these great ideas in my head. And I, you know, the family I grew up in, I don't know how my parents did it, but they instilled in all of us, like, how to be a hard worker and work for what you want and what it takes to do that. So I had no doubt in my mind when I jumped ship that I was going to make this happen, right? in, you know, like any business. And so 10 years, I think we're going on 11 years now. So 10, 11 years later, you know, like any business, you know, there's been good years, obviously, from an income standpoint, right, that have been better, and other years that have been not so good. But we've, you know, we've been able to kind of figure out how to manage that. You know, I'm really conservative in terms of where the money goes for different projects that we do, and where it needs to go. So so definitely going back to the your question, you know, it was an interesting time of you know, I think Chase was 2, I think, when he jumped off, and we were still paying for like an in-home daycare to kind of help. That was already been watching out, helping us while we were both working beforehand. And then they, you know, however we figured it out, like, they still helped out. So I was able to, you know, keep working the day job. And, you know, the day job now is like day and night. And any time that my mind's like constantly thinking of project time. But we, you know, we figured it out. And when I look at my family, like, I think we've had a lot of great opportunities. And I think, I still look at some of these opportunities that my kids have had. Like, the 1 year I helped out with the graphic novel workshop at the Highlights Foundation, and Dave Saylor from Scholastic was our special guest, and he came in for the day to talk, and my son was there with me, and he was in first or second grade, and he was reading Captain Underpants books, you know. And so in my head, I'm like, I don't know if he'll ever, like, and he sat there, like, he, if you ever meet Chase, he's a fantastic kid, and he knows so many facts. Like, he's a very smart kid. Like, he knows history and facts and all these things, and he loves talking with people. And he, like, left the table sitting with us at dinner time, and he went over and sat next to Dave Saylor. And I don't even think he realized who he was, like, sitting next to, but he was just sitting over there, like, having conversations. And I was, in my mind, I'm sitting there, I'm like, I don't know if he'll ever realize, like, the significance in my head of, like, here's the guy who is bringing this book series that he loves to read out the kids, you know what I mean? And it's in just all these cool opportunities that this journey has kind of allowed us to have. But at the same time, you know, it's you know, from a parent standpoint, I'm working, like, all the time, right? So it's a weird, like, work-life balance of trying to figure out how to manage that. And in all the years, I haven't been able to figure that out, because nothing is ever consistently the same. But what it has allowed me to do as a parent is be able to give more time during the day to my kids, in terms of, like, whether it's volunteering to read with the kids or the classroom, or helping out with this or that. You know, Chase still does scouting, and, you know, I was the den leader and the cub master and all these things for years with them, and I still participate with that. And, you know, now we're doing soccer and basketball, and we're helping the coach teams, you know what I mean? So it's given me a lot of flexibility to be able to do things that I think if I still were to have been working a full-time job, I don't know if I would be able to have done, you know, been able to have the flexibility to do it. Now, on the flip side, you know, then, you know, as I'm at practice, or we're at, you know, games all day on a Saturday or whatever, then when I come home, then I have to try and figure out, like, okay, where, you know, get back, try to figure out my work schedule in terms of, you know, giving all this time here. Now I got to get back to projects because everybody has deadlines. And you can only kind of juggle deadlines so long before everybody is like, can you please turn in work now? You know, it's been great. I think the benefits of everything 100% outweigh the any negatives in so many ways. And I can't say enough, you know, to be able to have this opportunity to be able to do this, you know, to be able to kind of, you know, I hate saying, like, living the dream, because I don't know if this was always a dream necessarily of something to do, but being able to do something that you love doing, I think is a I don't know, privilege isn't the right word, but something that everybody's able to do, you know, and I think that might be part of why I go back, you know, when I talk with kids and I go into schools and trying to let them know that they, you know, they don't have to just settle for anything, you know what I mean? Like, if there's something that they really want to do, you know, they can do it, you know, they just have, you know, a lot of what I go over when I talk with kids is trying to let them know that they can use their mind to create anything, their imagination and creativity to use anything, and then they can use their hands or whatever it is as the outlet of trying to get those things to come true. And it's a lot of, with going back to my own kids, you know, I've had a few opportunities where I could have taken pretty decent jobs as a designer and art director at different businesses. And it always just kept coming back to something wasn't working right with the negotiations. And then it all just really came back to, like, I want my own kids, you know, not just the kids that I talk to in schools, to know the same thing, you know, that, you know, my hope is that when I'm long gone, you know, whenever that happens, that my kids can look back and be like, okay, my dad and my mom are super hard workers, and, you know, they're both passionate about what they do. And hopefully it opens the door for them to know to not settle for just the status quo, and to push for those things that they really want to do, whatever that ends up being, and be successful at whatever that ends up being. So, yeah. So hopefully that answered the question. I don't know how.
Fascinating, because I when I look at the demographics for the podcast, it gives a little bit of information, but most of the listeners, I would say that they're over 30.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that people who say they, you know, will message me or whatever, hoping that I have some definitive advice about, you know, making them leave the faith, and I'm like, well, I don't know, but I talked to this person and this person. Everybody's a little bit different, but, you know, I feel like that belief, like you talked about, it's almost, you just, because in illustration or even being writer or creator of your own work, there is a lot of rejection, and that, the way you've mentioned it, you've looked at it as like, oh, something that can be insightful, that can help propel your work. And that's the kind of way I had to look at it, because I get a ton of rejection, and which is normal for most people. Now, there's always the, exceptions to the rules. Some people just right out of the gate. But the majority of the people I've talked to, they were like similar, like those little lucky, I don't know, luck or timing, whatever it was. And then where your skill sets are, it kind of propels you in that, right?
It does. Yeah, totally. Yeah, it does. And I think I was trying to think of, I recently had a conversation about with an art director, and them specifically saying like how difficult it is, like how much courage they give all the illustrators and people that they work with, like credit to be able to keep putting their work out into the world, in knowing that you have 100 different eyes looking at it and 100 different views of how they think your work, you know, it should be, in the credit that he gave to everybody in terms of just having the strength to keep doing that, you know, to have the courage to just keep going back at it, you know, and just, you know, and just keep building off that, you know. I guess I'll leave that at that.
And I was wondering, is there any advice that you would give? I think I put it for yourself, if you went back in time, you know, to your younger self when you first started this, you know, creative journey to being a full-time illustrator and also the creator of your own books. Would there be any advice that you'd give yourself?
So the biggest advice I always give when someone asks, or they, you know, I have random people that'll come up and be like, so my kid's going to art school, what's the biggest advice? You know, or they want to be a picture book illustrator or whatever the question is. And my biggest advice now, and just from experience, is knowing how to speak towards your work and be able to speak for yourself and stick up for your work at that. And if you don't have those skill sets, you need to figure out how to do that. I think that was one of the things, you know, when I look back at my time at Kent State, they really focused on gearing their students, preparing them for the workforce going out. Like, I probably would never show my portfolio that I graduated with to anybody. But those, you know, those firm ideologies or grounding, like that groundwork was really laid in my time there. And they really, you know, pushed you to have the grit to be able to speak for yourself in terms of your work and be able to sell it to somebody, or not necessarily BS, you know, like why you're doing something. But, you know, there was a whole semester there where they threw out all these semesters of like having, you know, high end work in this perfect craft, you know, when you put things together. And so they threw out the need of having all that out the door, and they completely did a 360 and wanted us to work more on concepts and being able to come up with these high creative concepts and be able to speak towards why it is that you created this for this particular project. So I think having that groundwork really laid really kind of helped tremendously, especially where I'm at now. And I think that's the number one biggest advice that I give people now, is just being able to speak towards your own work. And then when I was thinking about your question the other night, I think from if I were to go back in time, I would make sure that I learned how to draw and write better. And what I mean, you know what I mean? So going back to the grammar comment earlier, me as a 43-year-old adult, I have horrible grammar. And when I go back to my own schooling growing up, it's like, I can remember learning all this stuff, but nothing retained. And, you know, and if I had a guess, you know, I probably would have been diagnosed with some form of ADD or something, right? Because I talk about this when I go in the schools with kids, where and I'll do it now, you know, someone can be like looking at me, talking to me, and I'll be looking directly at them. Like I completely, like I'm understanding what's going on in the conversation, but my mind is thinking about 100 different things going on. And when I look back, you know, especially as an adult, I always tell kids that I've learned to control that now in terms of like creating lists or having like a journal with me to kind of keep my ideas and everything going down so I can focus on what I'm doing. But if I go back in time and make sure that I was 100% getting everything that I would need to know how to write well as an adult, totally would have make sure that those skill sets were being built. Because I, you know, being a creative writer, I don't think I've always had a problem with necessarily, but making sure that all those thoughts are cohesively put together and grammatically structured right is a difficult thing to do. And even just from like drawing, you know, because I can draw well, right? But there's people that I know that, like, I always consider there's two types of people. Like, there's the person who came out of the womb holding a pencil and could just draw anything, right? Like, whether it's cartoony or whether it's a perfect portrait. And then there's other people, like myself, who have the capabilities but had to work a little bit harder to get those skill levels up. And one of the things that I still struggle with now is just the human form, right? Like I could draw, if you give me an opportunity to draw you a cartoon of what a human form is, no problem. But you give me the opportunity to draw a realistic human form, it takes me a minute to kind of restructure how I'm going to do that. And I have to, you know, then I, you know, you're pulling out reference and then you're slowing down that pace of where it is. And if I could go back in time in, you know, because that's what a lot of things I'm working on now, right? In terms of like, you know, you're relearning all these things. But had I known that, you know, I would have spent, you know, because I always joke around that, like, I didn't know how to really draw or paint until I got to Kent State, right? And then I started taking painting classes and drawing classes. And I think I would have, looking back at it now, I would have focused on a lot more other figure drawing classes and really kind of pushed those, you know, those basic skills that you really should have a fine understanding of. You know, it's funny how it compares to like handwriting, right? Like you should know how to make your mark and those things that should be there. Should be there, you know, but for whatever reason, they weren't in my path in that like journey in there. But yeah, so short answer is speak for yourself, learn how to draw well and write well. And I think those things will take you far, in this field. So.
Well, thank you, Meryl, so much for your honesty and insight into your amazing career as a illustrator and just a book creator. I mean, because you do so many amazing different things with the work that you're doing. And I think that's what makes me excited to see it. And for those people who would like to see more of your work, where can we go to find that?
You can go to littlerainey.com. So littlerainey.com. Or I do a lot more social media on Instagram. And that's just at Little Rainey. I mean, if you just look up Meryl Rainey, you'll find me out there. No problem there. I do Facebook, I think mostly for family members, is where I've stayed connected there, and other friends that I've, you know, you just meet so many people. But mostly Instagram is where a lot of the new stuff is going up. So, but yeah, so I look forward to, you know, people are free to, you know, you got questions, let me know, and I'll answer them the best that I can. But, you know, experience brings a lot of education, I think, and always happy to share a story in the hopes that it might help someone else out as they go on their own path, creative path. So.
Well, thank you for being here, and thank you everybody for listening to My Creative Life. Bye.